The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
So this is 250 pockets of lostness in North Carolina, literally end to end, Murphy to Manio, and all points in between. They vary in size, but they have certain things in common with one another. They have dense populations. They have diverse populations. And we talk about the distance from the gospel in these areas. So, in other words, what's the likelihood that somebody who lives in this pocket of lostness is actually going to be confronted by the gospel in the coming and going of their daily life? They live pretty far removed from gospel encounters. Also, in lost pockets, we have declining churches. Now, that's not unusual because outside of lost pockets, we have declining churches. But that contributes to the distance issue. The reason why people aren't going to be confronted by the gospel is they're not encountering Christians living on mission. And so we find also, especially in our urban areas, unreached people groups. Some of the world's most unreached people groups live in our lost pockets here in Greensboro. For example, Pocket 22, we have the Hausa people, which is the fourth largest group of Muslims in the world. The largest unreached people group in the continent of Africa, and we have a sizable population of them here in Pocket 22. Also, various hard-to-reach population segments, and that's really where we're going to get at with the diversity discussion, is those segments. A few years ago, I ran across this quote from Jerry Rankin in a book that he wrote while he was president of the International Mission Board. He said, "The world is not a pancake, but a waffle. When you pour syrup on a pancake, it will flow all over a smooth, round surface, but not so with your waffle. It's a matrix of squares separated by ridges. If you want syrup all over your waffle, you have to deliberately pour it into each little square. The world is not a monolithic collection of homogeneous peoples like a pancake. There are barriers that keep the gospel from flowing cross-culturally." I agree with that. I think most of us have probably found that's true. We started looking at lost pockets this way. Originally, they were just big circles, big flat circles, and we realized there's a lot of diversity here. There's barriers, and we started looking at communities within lost pockets. But what we soon realized is they're not neatly defined. They don't have hard borders, and people that live in this pocket also live in this pocket and live between those pockets. And so I began to draw that out on paper one day, and I realized what we were talking about is spaghetti. That within a pocket of lostness, there are, let's take the Hausa people, for example, in Pocket 22. They don't just live in this little corner of the pocket. They're spread all through it. And then they come out and fall off of the plate and go make their way over onto another plate. So hard-to-reach population segments. They're not contained in any circle or square. They just meander through these pockets and into others and throughout the state. Our goal is to see sustainable, reproducible disciple-making taking place among every population segment within a lost pocket. Welcome, brother. So there's not one single church, not one single ministry, not one single mission strategy that's going to effectively reach every population segment. And that's why we try to help churches understand that we have to work together. When you see the diverse mix in a pocket of lostness, we can't just turn one church loose and say, go get them, because they're going to hit those barriers. They're going to find that they can make good traction with one or two segments, but not with all of them. So we have to work together to do this. So it takes prayerful seeking. Where are the diverse peoples in a lost pocket? Take your church out to prayer walk, prayer drive. Ask around, shop in international markets, talk to people of different ethnicities that you meet, find out where do people live, build relationships. We had a block party in one of our lost pockets here, one of the churches put on. We put a team of people out there in that block party who had one job, meet people. Don't work the hot dog grill. Don't man the popcorn stand. Meet people. And see where you can build relationships. And out of that, a dozen or so relationships were built with people from all over the world, from some very hard to reach people groups. In fact, one person, the South Asian Muslim lady, my wife really connected with, and they're building a friendship. You know, they're texting each other, you know, about just being a mom, you know, and so that relationship's going somewhere. So build those relationships and then look for opportunities to make inroads with effective strategies. And we're going to talk about what some of those have looked like into each of those segments. And kingdom cooperation, churches working together. It's not about growing your church or my church. It's about us reaching these lost people with the gospel and making disciples of all nations. They're going to end up in somebody's church, we hope. But here's the thing, is that there's so many thousands of lost people in these lost pockets. You can fill up your church and your neighbor's church and the guy down the street's church, and we're still not going to scratch the surface on it. So we've got to stop competing with each other over, you know, 5 and 10 people here and there, and realize we got to go after the thousands. Stop squabbling over the dozen. So, what types? Let me stop there before I move on. Questions? Any questions? Yes, sir.
So, I noticed you mentioned like some of these pockets are certain cultural groups, like the Hausa people. Most of these pockets, would you say, are they cultural groups, or are they just unreached places?
So they are areas where there are a variety of unreached population groups in that. So there's no monolithic pockets. There's diversity in all of them. So that's a good segue. It's almost like I set you up for that. I didn't, but because that leads right into what we're talking about. Within every population, within every pocket of lostness, and I don't think I found one yet that doesn't have diversity of ethnicities. Have you found one? I mean, there's not an all-white or all-black or all-Hispanic pocket. There's diversity of ethnicity, diversity of socioeconomics, diversity of residential types, so apartments, trailers, houses. There's diversity of residences. There's diversity of lifestyles, diversity of generations. Some of our lost pockets have the highest number of people in them are school-age children and senior adults. You know, and then you got a little bit of all in between. And then family structure. Lots of single moms, single dads. We've got a lost pocket here in Greensboro. 2 out of every 3 homes with children is a single mother home. And about 10% are single dads. So you got single dads, single moms, two-parent families. Lots of different kinds of family structures. In fact, one area we're finding there's a lot of families with two moms. That introduces a whole different dynamic of diversity in there. So when we go after these segments, what works really well, if you just kind of keep this in mind as you identify a segment in your area, is that every segment needs a champion. Somebody who says, you know, I want to lead out to help us connect with that group. Whether it's the Hausa, I'll tell you a story about Hausa in a little bit, or the poor, or the apartment dwellers, somebody in some church says, I want to lead out and be the champion for that group. They may not use those words, but you may see it. You may cultivate or develop it in them. And then we want to build teams around those champions because they can't do it alone. So who in this church, in this church, in this church can be a good teammate for that champion? And then the team starts working on a strategy. How do we get the gospel into these diverse communities? So John and I will share some stories with you, and you share your stories. If you're seeing effectiveness in engaging any segments, some of the stories are frontline stories that we have been involved in. Some of them we've borrowed from some of our other teammates, but we want to hear your stories as well. So let's talk about lifestyle. Up in Asheville, where you guys are not far from, our strategy coordinator, Steve Harris, has told us about a couple of things that are going on there. Well, the Bohemian community. These are the organic farmers. What does he call? He calls them granola girls and dreadheads. That's what Steve calls them. I don't think he means that. You know, I don't think it's a pejorative thing. It's like an affectionate term. But anyway, these people are all over Asheville, and nobody's reaching them. So some churches in the area began to pray for God to raise up a champion, a strategy even a church that could reach that community. And God in his providence brought an organic farmer from another state to live there who is a believer, who felt called to plant a church. And so this guy has a church start going in a... It started out in a coffee shop where all these guys come together every morning. They sit around and drink coffee. And from that, now they've moved out into an old church building that was declining, and they're starting their church out there. And then, of course, also Asheville makes a lot of news for the LGBT community. I've probably left off five or six letters in the acrostic. It changes regularly, but... out in Asheville, there is a ministry led by a young lady named Malia Allard that is engaging in these folks in this lifestyle effectively with the gospel. In fact, tomorrow, Steve and Malia are doing a breakout session on ministering to the LGBT community. And I would recommend that because they're doing it better than anybody we know in the state. So we're seeing good progress being made because in each of these segments, we've seen a champion who's built a team and found an effective strategy to engage. So what about you guys? John, do you have any in the triangle?
I was just wondering about the, like a cowboy church. You
know, cowboy church. Yeah.
That would be one, right?
That would be a lifestyle, yeah.
So their own little culture and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's taken off in a few spots in North Carolina.
In our area, we get a lot of hunters, outdoorsmen, people in firearms. And so some of these guys wanted to do like a dinner every year where they, you know, bring all the game that they kill, deer, duck, squirrel, fish, whatever. And it became one of our largest outreaches of the year just because there's so many people in our area that do that on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like that, but it's not something that I would do.
Right.
But the people in our community that were attending our church were very, very interested in that. And so they started inviting their friends, inviting their hunting buddies to this event over and over.
So that's a good front door into your church. Through that event, are you doing anything intentionally then to follow up with the people who come through that way to disciple them contextually?
What we have tried to do is that the individuals who invite them will try to get them plugged into either their discipleship group or their Sunday school class.
Great.
And we've had not a lot of instances, but a few, like maybe one or two a year, where we'll see someone get plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a huge success rate, but you know, out of 100 guys that come to an event, one or two a year will get plugged in.
Okay, great. So these are some examples of lifestyle segments. It might be somebody's hobby, it might be their niche, it might be the 24/7 way their life looks. We also see a lot of good things happening all around the state in our ethnic segments. So I've just thrown up here some pictures of a couple of different ones. John, do you want to talk about any particular ethnic groups that the triangles?
With the Hispanics. I mean, probably a lot of you have experience with Hispanics. You got Hispanics living near you. We've just been going in and... doing things like ESL for them. Like, for example, if your church offers ESL to Hispanics and you do it at the same time that you have Awana, you know, their kids can come to Awana. The kids all speak English, you know. They're in schools with your kids, you know. And so so then you have, you know, Hispanics learning English, relating to people, even just in the class. But then if you had conversation partners in your church who would get together with them, agree to meet with them once a week or something to practice their English, maybe go to their home and do it, then, you know, you start to build a relationship. That's what I was thinking of when you're talking about your hunters. You know, okay, how about after the big event, then there's some follow-up with, like, intentional, like hanging out. Well, let's go hunting together, you know, kind of thing. So that then
Discipleship.
Yeah, there you go. So even if they're not interested necessarily, you know, maybe it's a leap to them to go from being hunting to suddenly coming to church. But they'd be willing to hang out with somebody, with another hunter, you know. So it's that kind of thing for any of these segments. You know, we're talking with Pastor Marty about trying to reach South Asians. And, you know, just going to their festivals is one way to start connecting, you know. And it's all about just beginning to relate. And for some of these, some of us have to increase our cultural IQ. Right? Some people have a terrible cultural IQ. They're just they just don't have a clue. They're like, are you sure we should go over there? They might all be terrorists, you know? or I mean, I even heard of one who went into an apartment and then she was like, "Can we drink their water?" I'm like, "Hello, they're in America, you know? This is an American apartment."
They didn't bring their own water.
So. So even just to help them with, help our own people with sensitivity to other cultures, with learning about other cultures, you know, relating well to others. So that's a lot of what we try to do. And so we've seen some real progress with Hispanics, with South Asians, with the Congolese, with others, just by people beginning to relate to them. I mean, we do a lot with just like tutoring kids. Tutoring teenagers, you know, high school is pretty tough for a refugee kid, you know, who's been in a refugee camp for 8 years. So, you know, tutoring, teaching English to their parents. Well, you know, I've got a couple of friends, you know, Ibrahim is one of my friends. So I've just taken his family to the doctor regularly and to the, you know, like for shots and stuff. They just got to go down to the health department, get some shots to go to school. And so we've become really good friends. Came time for him he wanted to learn how to drive and get a driver's license so he could, because, you know, he's used to public transportation in other countries, but you got it. You pretty much have to have a car here in the Triangle. And so I took him to the DMV, and eventually he passed that test, and I taught him how to drive, you know. I mean, that'll help your prayer life a lot, you know, to teach a refugee how to drive. But we become really good friends. So what do? You know, I don't try to bring him to my church. It would just weird them out to come to our church, you know. But I'm definitely in relationship with him, and I'm weaving the gospel in to those conversations regularly. And I pray that one day he's going to come to faith. Maybe he'll end up at our church, but maybe not. Maybe in a house church somewhere with other people that are more like him. That's all good too. So yeah, it's just being intentional and beginning to relate to these folks from other ethnicities. So
yeah, that's some good examples and good principles. You know, we underestimate the power of just making friends with people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just make friends with people. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one, but I was won to Christ through my friends. Anybody else? So what if we made friends, you know, with people who need Christ? Some quick stories, just, you know, kind of different expressions of the same principles. Congolese refugees. So we have a lot of Congolese refugees in the triad. Two refugee agencies, one working in Guilford County, one working in Forsyth County. Well, actually, one working in Greensboro, one working in High Point, Winston-Salem. And they've both told me, you know, they said, look, if you've got churches that are willing to kind of adopt refugees, like, feel free, and you can do whatever you want to with them. Invite them to church, share your faith. We don't care. Like, we can't do those things, but you can do whatever you want. So, you know, churches connecting with new arrival refugees opens the door. When the Congolese began to arrive in Greensboro, one guy had been a pastor in refugee camps. Like, he was a very well-trained, well-seasoned pastor. He wants to plant a church. Well, we start looking together, and we find there's two areas where there's a lot of concentration of Congolese refugees. Both of them are lost pockets, but in one of them, we had a church that was willing to say, yeah, come in and plant here. So we were able to launch that Congolese church plant in a pocket of lostness where there's a heavy concentration of them because of good partnership there with that church. The Bhutanese refugees, this is a South Asian group. They're ethnic Nepalese who got kicked out of Bhutan, and Nepal wouldn't take them in, and so they had nowhere to go. They ended up here. We've got a lot of them here. We've seen a lot of good things happen with just personal relationships. A lot of churches that had mission stuff going on in South Asia already. It's like, well, don't stop sending your teams to South Asia, but look at how through that God might have been preparing you to receive on this end all the waves of South Asians that God is bringing to America. West African Muslims. So, trying to make a long story short here. So, I used to pastor a church that you can see the steeple of from one of these big windows out here in the concourse. And so, we had several West Africans in our church, and one of them was a Hausa. Now, when I first met her, I think you could count the number of Hausa believers in the world on your hands. So I got a call one day from a church in South Carolina that said, hey, we're interested in reaching Hausa people, and we understand there's a lot of them in Greensboro. Who can we connect with? Look, I actually have a Hausa believer in my church, you know? So this church from South Carolina started coming up and taking mission trips to Greensboro. This is like their training ground for getting their teams ready to go to West Africa. So anyway, when we started working, trying to build strategies to reach the West African Muslims in Greensboro, I reached out to that church and I said, hey, what do you guys think about kind of an ongoing effort here? And they said, well, we've got two of our college students graduated and gone to Southeastern. So Zach Lyons, one of our colleagues at the convention, he and I go down there and we talk to those students, and one of them said, yeah, I'm in. And she became our champion. She goes in and they own a lot of hair braiding shops. She goes in and basically spends the day hanging out in the hair braiding shop, getting to know these ladies, talking to them. She tries to take ladies from local churches in with her to get them to know them. You know, hey, you're my friend. This is my friend. You guys be friends with each other. And then she's going to take on another shop. So she's championing that segment and seeing a lot of good traction there. Hispanics. I don't know. You guys may have heard there's a little bit of tension in the United States right now about undocumented immigration. You heard anything about that? In some lost pockets, the undocumented population outnumbers the documented 2-1 or more. And so because of the fears that are arising in the current political climate, and we're not here to talk political policy or immigration policy, but the reality is when the name of this conference is Who's Your Neighbor? These are your neighbors that Jesus has called you to love. And so because of the fears that they have, they're not just going to show up at a building just because it has a sign out front that says Iglesia Bautista on the front of it, you know? We've seen some situations where people were apprehended on their way to church and deported. So we began talking to some Hispanic champions. What's it going to take to reach thousands and thousands and thousands of undocumented Hispanics in North Carolina? We came across some guys who had come to the United States from Cuba, who in Cuba, they were very successful at multiplying house churches. And they said, you know, the current immigration thing's got people afraid to go out to worship publicly. That's like communism did in Cuba. So maybe in America, house church movement can grow like it did in Cuba. It's different reasons, but same kind of realities. And so we've begun to employ that strategy in a couple of places, and we've got a really good network already off the ground here in Greensboro. They're meeting some in traditional churches. They advertise it. We're having service. They meet some people who say, I'm not coming to that. They say, okay, you just come over to our house for Bible study. You know, are they undocumented? I don't know. We don't check anybody's green card to know whether or not they should be able to come to worship or come to a Bible study, right? So those are just some examples. You guys have any stories about effective entry with unreached people groups or various ethnic groups? Chan, you were telling me about Laotian.
Yes. We had a Laotian refugee pastor from Thailand, escaped from prison and became a refugee, came to San Diego, and some people in the church got him to the hospital. And so since 1996, we've had the Ocean Church, but this past Sunday they finally ventured out and have their own church, and they launched out in Trinity, North Carolina, which is unusual. You don't see Laotians in Trinity, North Carolina. It's, you know, down
yeah.
Caraway and Victory Mountain.
Canada. Right.
So they've got probably about 60 active.
Wow.
But what has really caught fire is Burmese Karen, K-A-R-E-N.
Korean, yeah.
Korean mm-hmm. congregation. And we had a pastor, professor, who befriended Sitlin. We call him Pastor Sitlin. He was in Seattle. And we wanted to minister to the Burmese Karen group. And he came from Seattle about 4 years ago and started with 20, and he's got 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And they still meet in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Karen, and we have the Laotian.
Yeah, great. We did this breakout session at another event, and somebody said, it sounds like to me what you're saying is if we don't have somebody that can speak the language, there's nothing we can do. That's not what we're saying. If you have somebody that speaks the language, there's a lot more you can do. But even without having somebody speak the language, you know, everybody understands being loved. You know, everybody knows when you're loving on them. Everybody understands smiles and hugs and, you know, so, you know, just be hospitable, be friendly, you know, and God will, we haven't seen a situation yet where the language barrier stopped the progress of the gospel, right? I mean, hey, that's what Acts 2 is all about, isn't it? That the power of the Holy Spirit is mightier than language barriers when the gospel is going forth, you know? So, yes.
We're in the middle of a huge Latino population.
Okay.
Every time we have like an Easter egg outreach or a fall festival or something, we go into our communities, hand out flyers, on, constantly meet these Latino families, constantly meet them. After 5 years, we've had our first Latino family who started coming and bring their children to Awana. My husband is a little bilingual, wife none at all. But now they're regularly at Sunday morning service. The wife speaks no English whatsoever, comes to Sunday morning service, sits there with her husband and her children. But, you know, from a person of my background, it takes a long time mm-hmm. to make those breakthroughs.
But now you've got a person of peace in the community.
Yes.
That you can disciple, who can become your champion, that you build a team around, that can really make a lot faster progress with that guy.
Amen.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk residential segments real quick. I've got a picture here of an apartment complex and a trailer park. So we single these out because multifamily housing nationwide, the average statistic is 95% of people who live in multifamily housing are unchurched. Now, I meet people almost every day. I share this statistic about every day in meetings. And people say, well, that's not true around here. Okay. Oh, okay, it's not true around here. What is it around here? I don't know. Well, look, what we know is that nationwide it's 95%. So how much better is it here? Like, you want to just be completely optimistic and say, is it 75 here? I mean, whatever it is, it's got to be bad enough that it makes the national average 95. But even if it's 75, even if it was 65, that's two unbelievers for every believer, you know? So you can bicker about the percentages all you want, but there are just oceans of lost people in multifamily housing, and they are isolated from Christian influence. And a lot of times it's because churches don't care about those communities, or they think there's nothing they can do. We meet a lot of pastors who say, well, we'd go into that apartment complex, but you know, they won't let us. And we say, have you asked? Well, no, we hadn't asked because we know they won't let us. Well, if you haven't asked, you don't know, you know? And we actually have specialists who can train churches in how to go in well and do it well. So we talk about three strategies of entry into multifamily housing: the intentional,
would be where your church says, you know, we're right beside of an apartment complex or a trailer park. We want to adopt that and begin to serve that community. So, you know, go in with management's approval to, and not to go in and say, like, this is, I think, an important distinction. You don't go to the manager and say, hey, I'm from the Baptist church over here, and we want to come in and do this. Is that okay with you? They're probably going to say no. But if you go in and say, we would like to serve your community, be a good neighbor, bless your community, what are some things that you need that we could do for you? We had an apartment manager recently say, what do you mean? And the pastor that I was with said, I mean, if you could have somebody from the outside come in and do anything for your residents, what would it be? She said, I don't even know how to answer that. And I said, is there any work that would need to be done? She said, what kind of work? I said, like landscaping. Oh my gosh, yes, of course, yeah. I mean, that, like, so, like, you know, she's like, people would actually do this? You know, like, yeah, you know, I mean, do the kids here have a playground? No, they don't have a playground. Would they like a playground? They could come in and build a playground. You would come in and build a playground? I mean, this lady was about to give us a key to the, you know, to the whole complex. Because we don't have an agenda. Like, we, you know, our agenda is the Great Commission, but how we get the gospel in there, you name it. You want to have a frisbee golf tournament or whatever? I mean, you know, hey, we'll do it. We'll come in. Take what you're doing. We'll make it better by bringing our resources alongside of you. We'll give you better relations with your residents, help you do your events better, and we get access to the people. But if you go and say, we want to knock on every door and hand out flyers, they're going to say no every time.
I play Santa Claus.
Okay.
And we minister to a lot of the Hispanic kids in our community. And one year I gave a baby doll to a little girl. She hugged it, she kissed it, squeezed it, gave it back to me. And I said, honey, that's yours. And she said, all mine? I said, all yours. And she looked at me and said, why? And I said, because Jesus loves you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it wasn't threatening, but that evening when the teacher was dismissing class, she asked if anybody had anything they wanted to say. And she stood up and said, Santa Claus told me today that Jesus loved me. After that, I was able to go into the school there.
Yeah.
They give me a pass. I just walked in and sat down in the cafeteria. And then all the kids wanted to come sit down with me. Oh, you heard all kinds of things about parents and heritage and everything else. They're honest.
Yeah.
But it broke that ice.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think my point is, let's don't assume, like, you know, we tend to be one-track minds, and we want to say, look, we want to come in, we want to start a Bible study, we want to pass out evangelistic tracts door-to-door. You know, they're going to say no. They're going to say no to that. They have laws that actually force them to say no to that. But if you say, how can we serve you? You know, you tell us what you want from us. Now, they may ask for something you can't provide and be honest about that. You know, that's not something we can do. What's plan B? You know, what else can we do? But I've just found that when you go in with that kind of open heart, you tell me how we can bless your community. A lot of times they're just amazed that you would even offer that. The incarnational approach is when somebody from your church moves in there and says, well, you know, we want to reach that community so much that one of us is going to move in there and become the champion, the catalyst to reach that community. So maybe somebody in your church, you know, is maybe they're empty nesters now, their kids have moved out, and you hear them say, well, we're thinking about downsizing. Oh, really? How would you feel about coming over into this apartment community and being a missionary there, you know? And then the indigenous, that's the ideal. That's the sweet spot. The indigenous is when you reach somebody and disciple them in the community and they become your missionary in the community. But we have training on all this stuff, you know, and we can connect you to the resources for multifamily housing engagement. But we've got to do something about this because 95% of those people aren't even touched by a local church.
The rest of the... As far as the moving into a community, into an apartment complex, you know, some of these apartment complexes are really nice.
Yeah.
You know, you're not asking somebody to move into the hood to love on people.
But if they want to do that, we ask them to do that too.
I got a guy in my growth group who just did that.
Yeah.
I love that. But, you know, some of these others, they got nice amenities.
Yeah.
You know? They got a spa for the dog and, you know, all kinds of stuff.
In yeah.
Some of these places. If you got people who can afford a place like that and they're just talking about they don't want to have a big house anymore and all the responsibilities of it. Well, you know, those people in that type A or type B kind of apartment still need Jesus. And they just need somebody in there. There are a lot of lonely people in there, you know, and they're really not getting up and going to church. So we need to send people in there to live among them.
We have a ministry partner that we work closely with called Apartment Life. If you've ever heard of them, but they place people in these places through an agreement between Apartment Life and the management. Not because the management wants Christian missionaries in there, but because they want people in there to have community events, to help people get to know each other in the community. It helps retain renters because they feel connected to the community. So Apartment Life provides that, and in exchange, they get the apartment for next to nothing. And so if you have somebody that wants to move in, like I have three complexes right now in the Triad that are begging us, send us Apartment Life people, and we can't find them. So all of you, move to Greensboro. We'll put you in an apartment. Socioeconomic segments. This is one of my favorite pictures right here to share about this because this is actually very close to my neighborhood. So I live right here. This apartment complex right here is one of the lowest income complexes in the city of Greensboro. High crime, high drugs, all kinds of diversity in there. I mean, you name every ethnic group you can think of is in here. And people in the city are afraid of this community because of the crime and drugs that are known to be there. Now, this is a tree line. This house right here is a $1 million home. And this is Starmount Forest Country Club right there. So, you know, sometimes the rich and the poor are separated by a tree line. And so I prayer walk this area. I run in this area several times a week. And it's just amazing. I mean, it even, you know, it just feels different when you go from one block to the next. And the thing about it is that both sides of that tree line need Jesus. It's probably going to take a different strategy to reach those on this side as it is to reach those on that side. But you know what the interesting thing I find is? More churches are willing to come in and reach this group than they are to reach that group. We talk about hard-to-reach population segments. This is a population segment that Jesus identified as hard to reach. I mean, you know, he said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to be saved. I mean, we need some camel pushers out there that are saying, you know, hey, we want to be missionaries to that kind of community. Now, I can't promise you you're going to have a house with a pool in the back on the golf course, but you can build friends with those people. You can build friendships with those people. I've begun to just vary my running route through the country club, you know, so that, you know, maybe I'll run into somebody, strike up a conversation, and just see what God might do with that. The city or town, it's a town, not a city, of Walnut Cove, North Carolina, Lost Pocket 214. I started having some meetings up there with the pastoral staff at First Baptist in Walnut Cove, and they said, well, we've got a great space to reach out to the community. They took me down, showed it to me. They said, we just don't know what to do with it. It's an old doctor's office right on Main Street. I mean, small town USA, Main Street, storefront, the old doctor's office. I said, let's pray about this because this is great space. You know, so we started praying about it. And another convention employee said to me, hey, if you ever have any chance to talk to anybody over at Baptist Hospital, they're trying to do community work in what they call pockets of healthcare disparity. I said, where are pockets of healthcare disparity? They said, they basically lay right on top of our pockets of lostness. So I reached out to Baptist Hospital and I said, let's talk. We brought the vice president of Baptist Hospital to Walnut Cove. He walked into that building and he said, yeah, we want to do something here. So we're in the midst of conversation that we hope by June 1, we're going to launch a free medical care clinic in Walnut Cove for the impoverished people in that community who have no access to health care that they can afford. And this church is going to be driving it. And Baptist Hospital is going to be partnering with them to do it. Now, I don't know they can do that everywhere.
I don't know how long term it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be, I don't know to what scale or scope it's going to be, but we're going to do something there in partnership with the hospital. And just about every hospital that I know of wants to be out in the community doing things like this. And so great opportunities for partnership there if we just think outside the box a little bit. So I have a few final thoughts here as we wrap up. What can we do? So we've seen there's diversity all around us. It's ethnic, it's socioeconomic, it's residential, lifestyle. What can we do? Begin to prayer walk your community. Discover the hard-to-reach population segments. If you don't know how to prayer walk, I have a 30-second training program that I do. Do you know how to walk? Do you know how to pray? Can you do two things at one time? If you can multitask and you know how to pray and you know how to walk, you know how to prayer walk.
Can you pray with your eyes open?
Yeah, can you pray with your eyes open or walk with your eyes closed? Either way, you know. we have a great little booklet that Chris Schofield wrote called Prayer Walking Made Simple. Prayer Walking Made Simple. I'm sure they have them over in the exhibit hall. That's a just turnkey package. You could take that little booklet and lead. You could be an expert on prayer walking. But you could also take part in training that we do through the convention on prayer walking. We can come in, help your churches. No matter where you are in the state, you have one of us near you. So our team has six other guys on it that are all over the state. And we also have a Hispanic strategist. So if you're trying to reach out to a Hispanic community, we have a guy completely dedicated to that. Assess the vitality and disciple-making culture of your local church. So this kind of goes back to, you know, Jesse's statement about the sportsman's banquet. So you've got people coming in your front door. Well, then what do you do with them? Like what are they going to encounter once they're through the front door? What are you doing to disciple them in your church? 85% of churches statistically are on decline. We have a thing that our revitalization team puts out. It's a 10-question assessment, basically to tell you, are we on the incline, meaning we're healthy and growing? Are we on the recline, meaning we've plateaued? Are we on the decline, meaning that we're going in the wrong direction? So, you know, we can provide that to you. We can connect you to a revitalization cohort, and we can help you try to begin to shape the culture of your church toward making disciples. Build disciple-making relationships in the community. Just realize God, you know, Acts 17 says that God has determined the times and the boundaries of our habitation. God chose for you to be in your community, in your city now. He could have put you anywhere in the world at any time in history, and he puts you right where you are now. So begin to look at the people around you. How can you build relationships that lead to disciple-making? We are always trying to build or grow our strategy teams in Lost Pockets. So how many Lost Pockets do you have, John?
46.
You have 46. I will stop complaining. I have 40, and I thought I had a lot. I'm glad I don't have 46. But in each of these 40 Lost Pockets, 46 Lost Pockets in Triangle, I think John Gordy has more than that out in the Unifor area. We're trying to build teams of church leaders, pastors in some cases, doesn't have to be. Sometimes the pastor doesn't get it, but people in church do, and they say, we want to be involved. I say, then just don't tell your pastor, just come to the meeting. whatever people we can get to come together to say, let's identify and reach into these segments and begin to make disciples. This one here, sign up for Mission Insight. Some of you may have already done this. So we use a tool for mapping and demographic study called Mission Insight. It's a very expensive tool. It costs you a lot of money to go in there and sign up for an individual user account. But it's kind of like the gospel. It's expensive, it's costly, but it's free to you because somebody else paid for it on your behalf. The North Carolina Baptist Convention's user account allows for one user for every church. So we can get you signed up to be a user for Mission Insight, and you can go in and do your own mapping, your own demographics. You can upload a spreadsheet of your members, and it will plot your members. It's like a 21st century version of the old pushpin map in the wall, say, this is where our church lives, you know. But what that does is it helps us be able to sit down with you and look at that and say, look, you've got members all over this Lost Pocket. Let's equip them to make their homes places of gospel outreach, you know. So rather than just like, let's get everybody into our church, let's get the gospel out into the homes of our members, and we begin to reach that lost pocket. And then finally, connect with strategy coordinator for your area. And if we're not the coordinator for your area, we'll connect you with the one who is. Some of you already know that person and have met that person in your area. So those are some immediate action steps.